Okay, so I'm very, very happy to be here. I'm sad that I'm not with you in this beautiful hall, but I'm happy to host you at home. And what I'm going to talk about today is the way syntax informs us in diagnosis and treatment of people with syntactic disorders, and also what we learn about the critical period for language from this. So the plan of the talk will be, I'll start with showing how a theoretical syntactic construct explains very well patterns that we see in developmental language disorders. And then I'll show you a little bit how this developmental language disorder looks like. Then I'm going to talk about two groups of children who have difficulties in syntax due to specific insufficiencies that we'll see later. And then I'll talk about the critical period for the acquisition of syntax in the first language. So let's start. So I'm going to show you, I'm showing you the data of one child who came to our lab with the diagnosis, which I think is not a diagnosis, of a learning disability. So obviously something was wrong, but nobody knew exactly what was wrong. And we gave him this list of sentences to repeat. These are the target sentences on the left. And on the right is the way he repeated them. Now, at first look, it looks like a mess, right? He's able to repeat some sentences, he's unable to repeat other sentences, but then I'll try to make some, to apply some organization onto this. And I'll start with some colors. So now you can see that the colored sentences are the ones that he failed to repeat. And the ones that are light blue are the ones that he succeeded. And now let's look at what it does. So for example, the sentence, "This is the teacher that the boy saw," he was unable to understand, unable to repeat. "This teacher the student found," it's Hebrew, so in Hebrew it sounds better. He said, "This teacher the teacher found," he was not clear who does what to whom. "Which teacher does the girl like?" Another kind of, this time a question, he was unable to repeat. So now the question is, what exactly is common to all these things that he is unable to repeat? And we see that there are, so it's not just declarative sentences, it's not just questions, it's something that is shared by the different sentences. And when we look at the types of sentences that he is unable to repeat, we see that there is something common to all of them. So if we look at "which teacher does the girl like," "this is the teacher that the boy saw," "this teacher the student found," they are all presented in not in the regular order of, which is the regular order for Hebrew or in English, which is the performer of the action, and the theme. So usually the basic order would be "the girl likes the teacher," and here we have an order that is reversed. So there is something, the notion is that there is something that is common to all the kinds of sentences that he was completely unable to repeat. And this is the fact that the word order is different, different from the basic word order. We see that the object or the theme precedes the agent of the action. Now it's not only in repetition. We find that the repetition is a very, very good test for comprehension and production, but it's also when we only test comprehension. So for example, if we give the child, this is a different child with the same deficit, we give them a picture of two dogs and a cat, and we ask, "Which dog does the cat bite?" And we expect them, of course, to point to this dog. But this boy said, "That's hard." And then he says, "This one," and pointed to the left one. And then he asks me, "Right?" because my poker face is not great. And he said, "No, this one." And then he's pointing to the other. And then he asks me to say it again. And I say, "Which dog does the cat bite?" And he say, "They don't say." So nothing in this sentence includes information as to whether we are talking about the dog that is biting or the dog that is being beaten. The same happens also when they try to produce these kind of sentences. So this is a girl, a 15-year-old girl who came to us. She got the diagnosis of autism. She was not autistic, but she was completely terrified from having to speak. And I told her, imagine that there are two girls, a butterfly touches one girl, a mosquito touches one girl, which girl would you rather be? And then she said, I would rather be a butterfly. So she understood what I asked, but she was completely unable to say the girl that the butterfly touches. Now, when you think about the sentence, the girl that the butterfly touches, you see that it's exactly the same phenomenon that was difficult in the repetition task and in the comprehension task. So the butterfly touches the girl, and then we have the girl preceding the butterfly, and this is something that she cannot produce. So in general, we have something of a puzzle unless we have syntax. But luckily, we have syntax, you already, Luigi, Professor Rizzi, saved me some of the explanation, because he already talked this morning about how movement depend about the construct of movement dependencies and about movement, and about the fact that syntax, independently of children who find it difficult to say and understand sentences, there is a construct of movement where things are interpreted in one position but superficially appear in a different position. So actually, Luigi already did that, so I can skip it. But we are talking about syntactic movement. So we are talking about structures in which one element appears in a different place from the place it is interpreted. Or in other words, it's called internal merge. So what I suggest here is that syntax, or syntactic theory, and specifically this construct of syntactic movement, is our toolbox to explain what is common to all the structures that this child was unable to repeat. What is common to all these structures is that they involve movement, that they are derived by movement. And once the sentence includes movement, these children with syntactic deficits are unable to, and I'm saying children, but actually it doesn't, I'll show you later that it doesn't go away. So it might also be a 50-year-old or a 40-year-old person with this condition, with a developmental syntactic disorder. They show difficulties in movement. And even though these are look like different types of structures, there is one generalization that applies to all of them, and that is that they all involve movement. And it is also important to say that it's a selective deficit. So they don't have a problem in what Luigi explained as merge. So they don't have a problem with other syntactic structures. They don't even have a problem with subordination. They have a problem when the structure involves this kind of movement. And this kind of movement is called A-bar movement or WH movement, because, for example, in a sentence like, which woman did the girl draw? We have movement of the which from its original position into the top of the, this is the syntactic tree. So now that we have this organization, that we have this syntactic construct, we can understand why they were all unable to understand, repeat and say these sentences with movement, because they all involve the same kind of movement. So if we look at this woman the girl draws, this is the woman that the girl draws, which woman does the girl draw? All of them involve this kind of movement of the theme to a position before the agent. Now, they all involve movement, but not all structures with movement are difficult for them. So when we look at these structures like the girl that kissed the grandma, it also involves movement. It's a small movement, but it's actually the girl kissed grandma. And these structures, as I'll show you later, are not difficult for them. However, a sentence like the grandma that the girl kissed is difficult. So what is the difference between them? The difference is that one of them includes an intervener, and Luigi also presented this concept. And once there is an intervener in the movement, then the sentence is difficult to these individuals with developmental language disorders. So And the idea is that once we have a non-local movement, let's say talked about locality as a structural concept, it's not a linear concept, it's a kind of a structure that involves locality. And once the movement is non-local, once the movement includes an intervener, this structure is difficult. So if we look on the structure, we see that which woman moves across an intervener in the structure, and this is a structure that is difficult in syntactic disorders. Now, when we talk about syntactic disorders, usually we think about deriving the movement as if we are building the sentence. But I always think about it also as something that we need to interpret. So when a child with a syntactic impairment needs to interpret this kind of sentence, he actually hears which woman did the girl draw, right? So when he hears the which woman, he needs to hold it in some kind of a syntactic buffer and understand where it should be interpreted, right? And then when it should be interpreted in the closest, most local position, then they might be able to understand it. But when they have to cross an intervener in order to understand the sentence, this is when it becomes difficult to understand the sentence, and then they might interpret it incorrectly as involving the more local, the closer, hierarchically closer noun phrase. So what we see is that indeed the generalization is more focused than we thought before. So they have a problem in movement, but in movement that includes intervention. And this is also, we see this the same type of phenomenon in questions. They can understand subject questions like which girl kissed grandma, but they cannot understand which grandma did the girl kiss because the girl is an intervener. And the same with the object this grandma, the girl kissed. So we are talking about a syntactic deficit, a developmental syntactic deficit that affects syntax. First of all, it affects syntax selectively, and secondly, within syntax, it affects a very specific construct. So I think this is something that is important, because the fact that syntax might be impaired selectively means that says something about modularity and says something about the structure of the language system in the brain or in the mind. And what we see children who have only a syntactic deficit. So when we talk about language domains, we talk about syntax, but we also talk about lexica, about different lexicons. We talk about pragmatics, we talk about phonology, we talk about semantics. And when we talk about development, so SLI is specific language impairment, usually used for developmental language impairments. Now, DLD is also a term that is used, developmental language disorder. But what we see is that sometimes we see completely selective deficits. So we might see a selective deficit in syntax, we might see a selective deficit in different kinds of lexicons, in the phonological lexicon where they have where we store the phonological information about words, in the semantic lexicon. We might see deficits in phonology, different types of deficits in phonology that are selective, and we might see pragmatic deficits that one might call agraisia. So they might violate the rules on conversation, and this is what Professor Dehaene mentioned before when he talked about atomia. There are people who have a deficit in theory of mind that affects the use of language in the proper way, and they might have completely correct syntax, but only a deficit in pragmatics or in theory of mind. And others, people with syntactic deficits, might have completely fine theory of mind and completely fine pragmatic abilities. Semantics, it's not that I doubt that semantics exists, but it's just that it has not been described yet as a specific deficit in the developmental deficit. So going back to syntactically impaired participants, we see people who have deficits in syntax only without additional deficits. So I'll show you very quickly how these deficits look like in 275 children and adults with syntactic impairments. So For example, one thing that we are doing is we assess their comprehension using pictures. We assess their comprehension using various tasks, but we do so also with pictures. And the idea is that if it's confusing that the theme appears before the agent, what we might do is show pictures in which the roles are reversed. So we might show a picture of a grandma kissing a girl and a girl kissing grandma and say, show me the girl that the grandma is kissing. Okay? And we do this with all with different kinds of structures that involve this kind of movement with intervention. So for example, we might show a relative clause like the grandmother, show me the grandmother the girl kissed, and show them two pictures for them to choose from. We always include the simple sentence. First of all, we want to make sure that they understand the pictures and the task. And secondly, we want to make sure that they smile from time to time. So we show them the picture, show me the woman that the girl draws here, for example, or show me the elephant that the boy is washing. And what we see is that this is the object relatives, the lavender are the controls who have typical language, the orange are the individuals with language syntactic impairment, and we see that they cannot understand object relatives. So sentences like, show me the girl that the grandma is kissing. So for example, if we show them this picture and say, show me the boy that the clown feeds, they really don't know what to do, and they say, this is one 12-year-old who told me, no, wait, show you the boy, and then I say that the clown feeds. The clown feeds him. It points to me on the picture, showing me that he understood the picture, but he just cannot make sense of the sentence and boy he should point, and in the end, he pointed to the clown. And the same happens with the other kinds of structures that involve this kind of movement. So for example, if I say this cat, the dog bites, again, in Hebrew, it sounds good. They fail to understand it in comparison to much, much younger, to 6 and 7-year-olds with typical language. Even when we ask them a question, so for example, which elephant does the boy wash, when they have to point to the right elephant, they really don't know what to do, and they fail to understand these kind of sentences. So as an example, when I showed a girl in the seventh grade, which is 6 years after all the Hebrew speakers master this structure, I asked her, which girl does the woman photograph? And she says, I say, which girl does the woman photograph? And she says, I didn't understand this sentence, which, and then she just says, she points to the picture and says, she photographs her, she her. I don't get it. Okay. So they find it very difficult to understand these structures. And when we look at typical acquisition, so when we look at the way these kind of structures are acquired, what we see is that 3-year-olds still don't get, so the interesting orange is the interesting structure, which is the object relative, so the elephant the boy is washing. They don't understand it when they are 3, they don't understand it when they are 4, they don't understand it when they are 5, but they do start understanding it when they are 6, and when they are 7, they are typical language acquisition. People with the typical language acquisition are completely fine already when they are 7. And for this work by Belletti and Rizzi and me, Belletti with 3 T's, I see, we suggested that actually the difficulty of young children is this exactly this structure of intervention. So the structure of movement that involves intervention in a specific feature configuration. So if we go back to the individuals with syntactic impairments, what we might think is that children with syntactic impairment are actually, when they are 20 years old, they are stuck in this kind of locality intervention stage. So they are stuck in the stage in which 5-year-olds are stuck in, say, in Hebrew, in Palestinian, in Arabic, in Italian, etc. And just this. So the idea is that it's not only when they hear these sentences, even when they see the sentence written, they find it very, very difficult to explain it. So for example, this is H when she was 12, and we showed her the sentence, the puppy that the boy wants eats chicken soup. And she says, that's hard. And I ask her, what's hard? And she says, deciding who eats the soup. And the sentence is in front of her all the time, but it doesn't give her a clue as to who eats the soup and who wants whom. And I ask her, who can it be? And she says, either the boy or the puppy. I don't know. So the sentence just, she understands the words, but the sentence doesn't give her what she needs in order to interpret who the agent is and who the theme is. And in order for you to understand how she feels and how the other people with developmental syntactic disorders feel, I give you this sentence, and I'll read it. The man that the old man saw, he fell. And now I just want you to tell me who saw whom. Okay, I wish I could see your faces. I can't. But try to tell me who saw whom. If you cherish this feeling that you have this very moment, I think this is the feeling that children with syntactic difficulties have. So they understand all the words, they understand the verbs, they understand the nouns, but they still cannot make sense of who does what to whom in the sentence. And if you don't understand it, it's fine. It means that you're normal, that you don't have a deficit, because the human system cannot interpret these kind of structures with two embeddings. It's just to give you some feeling of how you can look at words that you completely, that you understand completely, but it's very hard to explain. Once you do some kind of structuring, as we do in treatment, then you might start to understand the sentence. Now, the point is that they have a problem not only in production, in comprehension, but also in productions. So even when they try to say these sentences, they find it very difficult. I showed you before the girl who wanted to be a butterfly. And when we look at different ages, we see that whereas typically developing children, you can see here object relatives, they can produce these sentences very well. Individuals with syntactic impairments find it very difficult. This is percentage correct. When they are 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and I can tell you that this is something that doesn't go away unless we treat it. Now, how important is it? Is it important that there are some children who find it difficult? So for that, we went to two whole schools of learning disabilities. I told you before that this child that came to us, the first child that I showed you, had a diagnosis of learning disability. Now, when a child comes with a diagnosis of learning disability, we don't know what to do with them. We need to understand exactly what's wrong. So we tested this whole more than 100 children in each school. We tested them with syntactic tests and phonological tests and lexical tests and reading and writing and memory. And what we found is that these children who did not have any diagnosis of language disorder, just a diagnosis of learning disability, you want to try to guess what is the percentage of children who had a deficit in movement with intervention? 86%. So that's huge. So the really almost all children, or the very vast majority of children who are diagnosed with learning disability, who drop from school, are children who have syntactic deficits exactly in this kind of movement with intervention. Now, also, when we go to behavior problems in Israel, there is this class of children with behavior problems. They also find it very, very difficult to produce and to understand structures with movement. Now, I wanted to say something about sign language, but I'll skip that. But I will say something about treatment and then move to critical period. We see that it's a very common impairment. In regular classes, we see usually between 3 and 4 children who have this problem. So around 10% of the children have this syntactic problem. What do we do? So when we treat them, we actually work with them as if they were little syntacticians. So we teach them. So there is a pen for agent and pen for theme and pen for the verb. And then we just ask them to color the elements and do the actual trace and movement. And what we see is that when we teach them, for example, this is a child that we taught him relative clauses and topicalization, even though we did not treat WH questions, he improved in WH questions as well. So this is something that can improve significantly, and this improvement stays over time. Now I go to the second part of my talk, and this is what are the sources of this impairment, of this developmental deficit in syntax. So one source is genetics. I'm not going to talk about it today, but we often see that parents of children who come to us with syntactic impairments also show difficulties in the same kind of structures. But I want to talk about two additional sources for this deficit in syntax. One is TMN deficiency, and the other is lack of exposure to language. And I'm starting with TMN deficiency. So TMN, vitamin B1, is a vitamin that is crucial for many, I can show you, many mechanisms in the brain and in the developing brain. And this, and it's something that doesn't stay in the body more than 2 or 3 weeks. So if we do not consume TMN, vitamin B1, for more than 3 weeks, it is the storage is depleted and we don't have TMN in our body. Now, sadly, there was a catastrophe in Israel in 2003 where children were consuming a milk formula that did not include TMN. And we are working with this, so they were consuming, during the first year of life, they were consuming a milk formula that did not include this crucial vitamin. And since they are 4 or 5, we are working with them. Now they are 17 and 18, and we are still working with them and testing them. And we, again, gave them a very broad battery of tests that include syntactic tests and lexical, phonological, conceptual, IQ. Their IQ is completely fine. But we wanted to know what happens when a child does not consume TMN during the first year of life. And later, of course, they did have TMN, but for several months they did not. And we wanted to test what their language is like. And what we see, and I also only show you the data from when they were 8 year olds, that there were 97% of these children with a TMN deficiency in infancy who showed language impairments. And what kind of language impairment? When we look at their ability to understand sentences with movement, we see that they are very impaired in comprehension and production and repetition of sentences with movement. So in this case, for example, 55 of the 61 children were below the control in the production of relative clauses. So we see that the TMN deficiency causes a deficit of the type that we saw, of a syntactic deficit. Now, it is very important to say that adults who have TMN deficiency, for example, people with alcoholism, do not show syntactic impairments. In fact, they don't show language impairments at all. They just show memory problems. So what does it mean? What I want to suggest is that actually it means that there is a critical period for the development of brain for syntax. And once there is no TMN during the first year of life, it blocks the syntactic development, at least of WH movement with intervention. Now, this critical period is selective to syntax, first of all, because their IQ is completely fine, their conceptual abilities is fine, and many of them also show intact lexical abilities, intact phonological abilities. So there has to be something that happens during the first year of life that critical period opens for the acquisition of WH movement, and then it closes, and if the brain is not able to take the chance, it misses this critical period. Another, and that's the final group that I'm going to talk about, another important group is the group of children with hearing impairment. Children who are born with hearing impairment, also show, and now I don't show you each chart separately, you already know the drill. The pink ones are the, this is percentage correct in different kinds of structures with WH movement. And you see the children with hearing impairment from birth, in general, show significant difficulties in the comprehension and production of structures with WH movement. And now that's really strange, right? Why should children who just can't hear well not understand and not be able to produce sentences with WH movement? And what we saw that was that some of the children were fine, some of the hearing impaired children were fine in the syntax, others were impaired. So the question is, what exactly character distinguishes the ones who were impaired from the ones who were fine in syntax? So the first thing that we look for is hearing, the types of hearing aids. Some of them use a hearing aid, some of them use cochlear implants. We thought maybe there will be a difference between them, but there was no difference. So within the children who were good in syntax, we found children with hearing aids and children with cochlear implants. And within the children with impairment, we found cochlear implants and hearing aids. So it's not that. The other thing that we thought was maybe the ones who are very, very deaf, the ones who don't hear anything, will be the ones who don't understand syntax, and we found no such connection. So we tested moderate, severe, and profound hearing loss, and there was no difference in their syntactic abilities. The only thing that explained the differences between the children who understood, the hearing impaired children who understood these structures and the ones who didn't, was whether or not they received a hearing device, hearing aid or cochlear implant, during the first year of life. And that was the only thing that explained the difference between these children. What does it mean? It means that there is a critical period for first language acquisition during the first year of life. We found the exact same thing with 113 hearing impaired children who speak Palestinian Arabic. Again, children who received their hearing aids during the first year of life, not many of them, where 60% of them were intact, whereas only 4% were intact of the ones who received their input after the first year of life. And it doesn't really matter what kind of language they acquire. Even children, hearing impaired children who receive sign language during the first year of life, they also show a completely intact syntax. I'm skipping this here. So what we see here is that there is an evidence for very, very early critical period for syntax in the first language. Usually when we talk about critical periods, we talk about whether, you know, when we go on sabbatical with our kids, whether they will be able to acquire English without accent. And there we talk about much later critical periods and critical periods for the second language. What I'm talking about here, both depend as a result of what we see in hearing impaired children, and as a result of what we see in TMN deficient children, is that there is a critical period for the acquisition of the first language. And if children do not have the right building blocks for their brain during the first year of life, or if they don't get the language input that is needed during the first year of life, they might develop a deficit, a selective deficit in syntax that affects WH movement. So I'm summarizing, WH movement can be impaired in children and adults with syntactic deficit. Syntax is a very powerful tool for explaining how to diagnose and how to treat impairments. This deficit in syntax is quite widespread and should be treated. And language exposure during the first year of life and proper nutrition is crucial for the development of syntax. That's it. Thank you.